Welcome to Season 15 of the Art of Teaching podcast. I'm Matthew Green, and I'm so grateful that you've joined me today. Before we get started with our discussion, I would like to acknowledge the Dharawal people, the traditional custodians of this land on which I'm recording, and pay respect to elders past, present, and emerging. I acknowledge the stories, traditions, and living cultures of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples on this land. Today I have the privilege of sharing a snippet of a larger conversation that I had with the brilliant Santos Gonzalez Verado. Santos has spent the last 25 years working as a teacher, administrator, and leadership coach in San Diego. She supports district, school, and teacher leaders navigating challenging and complex educational landscapes as a leadership coach, management consultant, and training facilitator. In this conversation, we talked about how to build cohesive school communities, the power of authentic relationships, and how to create the right conditions for students to thrive. I encourage you to listen to the whole conversation. I'll link this in the show notes below.
One of the fundamental shifts that I made in my leadership is along those lines, that I'm not coming in here because I have the answers and will fix this community, right? The community is doing, I have to listen to what's going on closest to those students. I have to listen to the families. I have to listen to the students themselves to figure out what it is that we need to do to meet their needs, to help them thrive, and to not limit their opportunities, right? And so, it takes a lot of listening. It takes a lot of undoing a lot of these harmful internalized ideas of my own culture, in the broader American context. And all of that stuff is super, super painful to kind of realize, holy smokes, I have been perpetuating these harmful practices on the students that I most wanted to help. And it's because I've internalized them from the broader culture, And so I had to just do a lot of unlearning around that and more listening and seeing the gifts that the students and families already bring to the table and helping the school become respectful of that and supportive of that.
Like, how did you begin to sort of create that safe place for your students that I'm assuming were there issues with things like attendance and connection with home and school and families? And how did you even begin to pull all of those things together and build that sort of thriving school community? It's a big question.
It's a big question for sure. And the biggest thing that there are two things that I did that were my priority. One was I wasn't going to focus on test scores. Number one, I was like, nope, test scores. No, test scores don't mean students are learning or that they're not. They're not an accurate measure of what is happening in school. So I want to listen to my teachers and my students and witness it as close to them as possible, measure it as close to the learning as possible so that I can be really in tune with what my students need. So that was the first thing. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to play this rat race where I'm going to try to get the scores up. That's just not what I'm going to do. The second thing was a deep focus on building relationships. So I told my staff, or I really worked with my staff on understanding that the biggest driver of motivation, the biggest driver of creating this place where students are respected and loved and cared for and feel safe to learn is your relationship with them. And so I kind of unshackled them, so to speak, from these pressure expectations that usually teachers are under to get the scores up. And allow them the space to create meaningful relationships with students. And that was our priority. Part of that work was a book that I talked about earlier, Dr. Bruce Perry's The Boy Who Was Raised as a Dog. You know, the school that I'm talking about in particular, I was placed there by my superintendent because it was the lowest performing school in the district for many years. It had been so for many years. And so I really wanted, so it had a lot of things, high poverty rate, you know, lots of domestic violence in the area, lots of drug abuse in the area. And so it was really impacting the kids. So I knew that armed with this information and knowledge about how trauma impacts students, not that all my students had trauma, but some did, we set about really focusing on building relationships. And that had such a profound effect. I mean, it increased our attendance. It increased, it decreased like major behavior issues. I mean, it just went way down. And our surveys from the district that they send to the families and to the upper grade students, they reported higher levels of happiness at school. They felt connected to the school. And so everything else that I did at the school was built, predicated on building these strong relationships with students in the community.
So how do we measure successful schools? Because it seems as though we're relying purely on test scores. I know in Australia we have a focus on English, math, science. Mm-hmm. If we're relying purely on that, do we miss something? And what do you think, what are some of the other metrics which you think we should be using as well?
So I'm actually right now writing something about this for myself, but I'll share with you what it is. Outcomes. Huh? Yes, exactly. Hot off the press. So it's this notion of outcomes versus conditions. And so for me, I really truly believe that in education, we have never gotten it right around how to measure student learning on a large scale, right? Anytime I think we try to measure the student learning on a large scale, whether it be across a district or across the state, we distort the relationship between student success and actual learning, right? And I'll give you an example. So I was in a meeting the other day and we were kind of having a discussion about this. And I was trying to explain that there was a woman on that team who said when she was a teacher, she had a student named Amir, who was a refugee, new to the country, and he knew very little English. However, they worked really hard together. And during the scope of that school year, he increased like some ridiculous amount of reading levels, like 3 or 4 reading levels, but he was still below reading his grade level reading score, right? And when he took the state test, obviously he was rated very low, right? So if you extrapolate that out to a whole school full of Amirs who have increased their reading levels like so much, however, still fail the state exam, that school will be designated as a failing school, right? Because on the state test, it shows that they are failing, right? However, when you look closely at what actually happened with those students, Amir did experience so much growth and learning. Yeah. And so we have to be just more careful how we measure student success. And we have to, if we want to be accurate about it, we have to get as close to the students as possible. Yeah. But that can be complicated, right? Because how do you do that on a grand scale?
Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the podcast episode today. It's a privilege to get to share these conversations with you and continue to invest into our incredible profession. If you have a few moments, please do me a favor and leave a review on iTunes, Spotify, or through whichever platform you're listening today. If you wouldn't mind also hitting the subscribe button and sharing it with your networks, it would really help to get the word out to as many educators as possible. There are different ways to connect in the notes below, including links to the website, the Facebook group, Twitter, and Instagram. Thank you again for taking the time to listen. It means the world.